This is Invest Talk from KPP Financial, helping investors make sense of the markets one day at a time. Here's your host, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome to the Thursday, July 2nd, 2026 edition of Invest Talk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and I'll be with you over the next 55 minutes or so as we round out the stories for the week, bring you issues that matter, and most importantly, answer your finance and investment questions before we head off for the long weekend. Now, I mentioned it earlier in the week. I'm sure Justin mentioned it as well. Tomorrow is a holiday as markets are closed, so we will be having a best of episode. Another issue I wanted to remind you about is that our newest Invest Talk Wealth webinar, Beyond the Yield, How to Invest for Your Income Needs, was a couple days ago. And if you missed it, it is now available on the Invest Talk YouTube channel. So I encourage you to go check it out. Okay. In just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance, as well as the show topics that I'm bringing to the table. But first, let's tackle this caller question.
Hey, Justin and Luke, wanted to give you guys a call or to ask about Cardinal Health. I've heard some good things about that company listening to your show over the years. Can you please give me your analysis where they're at today? Would that be a good choice in trying to get a little healthcare into my portfolio? Big fans of the show. We'll listen to the podcast for your answer. Thank you.
Cardinal Health, a name that we used to get pretty frequent calls about, that's ticker CAH, is actually the number two U.S. pharmaceutical distributor just behind McKesson. They have $56 billion in quarterly revenue from their drug distribution, specialty pharma, oncology, and their at-home solutions. And they also have their global medical products distribution. So think your medical and surgical products, your masks, your items that are used in surgery. Year to date, this name is up about 16.2%. And it's done really well over the past 3 months, up 11.63%. It has, as healthcare has started to rally over the past couple months, done far better than the industry. I mean, The industry is still negative year to date. This thing is outperforming it by 19.3. Last year, it outperformed it by 27.2. It has perennially outperformed the industry coming out of the pandemic. And with the exception of 2024, it's had some pretty strong outperformance relative to the S&P 500. Now, it's been a while since it has reported earnings. April 30th, it looks like, was the last time that it reported earnings. But earnings are pretty solid. Gross profits up 18% year over year. Operating earnings up 18% as well. They beat GAAP, rather non-GAAP EPS by about 12.6%. That came in as a 35% growth year over year. And top line revenue up 11%. I mean, these are pretty solid numbers that led to a bunch of analysts raising price targets. It is probably the most consistent beat and raise name over the past couple years. I mean, this is not just a one-off event here. We've been seeing it quarter after quarter, and a lot of that is driven from their oncology and special revenue growth, which is up 30% year over year. They also benefit from distribution of GLP-1s, and that contributed 6 points of pharma growth. If you're comparing it to McKesson, I mean, I like both names. This one's a little bit cheaper. The balance sheet is, I would say, a little bit cleaner. We talked about the other day why we don't have price targets as the gospel for anything. But for what it's worth, I mean, it's got 14 buy recommendations, zero sell. I mean, it's pretty pristine consensus. And free cash flows in the $3.3 to $3.7 billion at a $56 billion market cap. I mean, I'm not seeing a lot that's bad here. And so this name, which is now trading at about 19.8 times price for looking earnings, looks cheap. I mean, it is a bit expensive relative to where it's been the past 5 years. But from a technical perspective, it's solid. It's been a big run-up in the past 3 months. I would look for a little bit of consolidation, maybe around the 220. But I mean, this is a great name. It's a great compounder, clean. I, in fact, like it. That is Cardinal Health, ticker CAH. We had a great show yesterday. We looked into a story that was really focused on a bit of a scorecard for the first half of the year. It was a look back at what actually worked and what the consensus predicted in January, because most of the time, those two things are pretty far apart. We also answered a listener question on ticker XMTR. They specialize in manufacturing on demand for high precision production parts as well as prototyping. That question was actually submitted via the comment section of our YouTube channel. If you happen to miss that show, I encourage you to go check it out. And remember, the best way to never miss an episode of Invest Talk is to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Alrighty, on to today, where our main story is about the index fund trap. As an example, when the Russell 2000 is up over 20% and the S&P is under 10%, saying I just own the index means very different things depending on which index you own. So this story will give me a bit of a chance to explain how market cap weighting has quietly concentrated listeners into a handful of names. Also, we'll touch on the rotation trade, which had another great week this week. Bit of a story on the risks facing the power grid. And, you know, those risks tend to be heightened during the summer in the hotter months, people using more electricity. And a recurring story, a bad time for Blue Owl as they're hit with another nearly $5 billion of redemption requests. We also have some voicemail calls ready to play, including one on Oracle and another on Barrick Mining Corporation. Some questions from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel, and hopefully we hear from some of you live before the weekend. We are going into a break. It is our first break, and it is always a quick one. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, I encourage you to call now at 888-99-CHART. When we come back, we'll talk about today's market activity.
In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Stocks today were pretty much all over the place. I mean, the Dow was up 1.14%. The S&P was flat. The NASDAQ was negative 80. And the Russell 2000 was down 55 basis points as well. Interestingly enough, something we talked about earlier in the week when the equal weight S&P underperformed, well, it outperformed today as the RSP set a fresh all-time high. It outperformed the S&P by about 70 basis points. In spite of this, looks like the NASDAQ and S&P still logged pretty solid gains for the week. I mean, it is a holiday-shortened week, so on 4 days, it did pretty well. You know what didn't do well? Semis. Memory. They had some weakness yesterday. There was some follow-through on that today. Trucking, airlines, regional banks, quantum computing, other underperformers, software, kind of half in one basket, half in the other basket. And healthcare continue to do well. Hospitals, medtech, all doing well today. Energy, staples. On the bond side, I mean, you didn't get much movement in the treasury market. It was a bit stronger on the short end where you saw yields falling anywhere between 2 to 3 basis points. The dollar was down 50 basis points, though it was down a bit more for most of the day before clawing back some of those losses. Gold up 1.1, silver up 1, crude oil pretty much flat, settled up 20 basis points. On the data side, we did get the June employment report. Headline gain of 57,000 jobs, well below the consensus. I mean, 110,000 was the consensus. There was a big downward revision to May to 129. Initially, we saw 172. April was also revised down 71,000. But not all bad. I mean, you had the unemployment rate down to 4.2%. It was previously 4.3, and economists expected a hold. But then you also had the participation rate drop to 61.5. That is the lowest level since March of 2021. Initial claims came in at 215 versus the forecast of 220. So some good news there. Continuing claims at 1.814 million versus 1.81. Not much difference there. I mean, overall, right, you have a bunch of moving pieces. You had some data, employment data always has an outsized impact on growth expectations and therefore, you know, what people are thinking in terms of rate moves in the future. You had that continuation in unwinding in momentum in semis because of AI capex and just escalating input costs, softer non-farm payrolls, rates also with those moves on the front end had a bit. But I mean, overall, what you tend to see in holiday shortened weeks is not much volume, not much liquidity, moves outsized. So we'll see next week what happens in terms of follow through. In fact, looking ahead to next week, highlights will include ISM services on Monday and June FOMC minutes on Wednesday. See if you can squeeze in a quick question from the YouTube comment section question bank. This one on MCD. Wanted to get your thoughts on MCD. Thank you. MCD is Mickey D's, as the kids call it, McDonald's Corporation. It is the world's largest restaurant brand, actually. Has probably nearly 50,000 locations all across the world, most of which are franchised. McDonald's is one of those things where when consumer spending tends to look weaker and consumer ability wages tend to grow less than inflation, well, that's when you start to see people move towards fast food. And let's see what happened. With most recent earnings in May, revenue up 9% year over year. That was a beat. Earnings per share beat by about 3.3%. Global comparable sales up 3.8%. Operating income up 12%. U.S. comps 3.9%. I mean, pretty solid numbers here. But they did warn Q2 expected to see meaningful deceleration from those comps, especially in the U.S., bit of an FX tailwind to earnings per share at the current rate. So if that moves against because of how big they are globally, that can certainly hinder earnings. But I mean, this thing's a Dividend Aristocrat. They got a 50-year history, and it's currently trading. Where is it trading at right now? I mean, it's last time I checked, it was in a decent position compared to where it's been. Pausing for dramatic effect as my computer loads. Wow, that's taking forever. I mean, year-to-date, it's down 8% over the past 3 months. It's down 863. It is at the low, right? The low's 19.1 over the past 5 years. It's 19.8. So it's a solid compounder that is really, really cheap. It is probably the most iconic franchise on planet Earth, certainly in the food space. The yield sitting at 2.1 is pretty solid. But margins are compressing in a way that has really, really hurt this name, specifically on the U.S. side. And so what is the catalyst to move this thing higher? I mean, they already just decelerated guidance for Q2. I like the name. I like the brand. Everything's become so darn expensive there. That's certainly a problem there as well. But anytime someone downgrades guidance, not the time to enter the name. So I'd keep it on my watch list for now. McDonald's Corporation, ticker MCD. All right, folks, our 24/7 InvestTalk voice bank never closes. So you can leave your finance and investment question anytime at 888-99-CHART. Our work will continue after this break. So hang on, we'll see you on the other side.
This is InvestTalk. Now closing in on 63 million downloads. And Luke Guerrero is here taking your questions live. 888-99-CHART.
We already talked a little bit about the jobs numbers today, right? The economy added 57,000 in June, but about half of what economists expected, certainly down from what we already saw in May. And that was a bit of a jolt, right? The market's response, in a way, was telling. The Dow ripped. I mentioned it was up. I don't think I mentioned it was a record. It was up 595 points. Everywhere else didn't do as well. And what that tells you is essentially you have this continued rotation, right? This split is the rotation trade in a single session. You have the money flowing out of AI, you have money flowing out of semiconductors, and it has to go somewhere. In this case, it's going into healthcare, it's going into staples, into financials, and into industrials. The chips that essentially powered the market to all-time highs really just a couple weeks ago are suddenly the sector that investors are wanting to sell. Now, the catalyst isn't because the number was cut in half, right? It's what the number does to expectations of what the Fed is going to do. If you looked before today, you'd see that traders put the odds of a July rate hike at roughly 30%. But after the print, those odds dropped by a third to about 20. And the logic's straightforward. If the labor market softens, the Fed can't justify hiking rates in order to fight inflation without risking a recession. They have that dual mandate, price stability, as well as maximum employment. And that suddenly has two legs that are pulling in opposite directions, and that creates space for the Fed to pause rather than to tighten, and certainly rather than to cut. And, you know, there was this assumption that the Fed would be squarely focused on inflation, but now they're going to have to at least consider the labor side of their mandate as well if the economy doesn't remain as, let's say, rip-roaring as it looked a couple weeks ago. I mean, the equity market, in a way, at least for some time, has kind of been pricing in this Goldilocks outcome, this inflation cooling, the job market holding steady, rates not going higher, AI earnings just absolutely crushing it and carrying the index. But I think we're probably closer to that than we are in the case where the Fed has to aggressively raise. You know, I'm not necessarily saying that all these things will manifest themselves positively, but I don't see it yet, especially if the conflict starts to wear down. The Fed having to hike aggressively, it doesn't mean rates aren't going to be meaningfully higher, but aggressive hikes unlikely. And really, this kind of goes to show how little anybody knows about direction, right? Wall Street was calling for rate cuts at the beginning of the year, then rate hikes in May. Now it's back to maybe neither. Nobody knows. The market's conviction changes every single time you get new data. What's today's report doesn't confirm that the rotation trade is going to continue. It's you don't see that until you see meaningful follow through there. I mean, you're moving away essentially from the most dominant theme of the year. And every piece of data that weakens this case for rate hikes kind of strengthens the case for parts of the market that are most sensitive to borrowing costs, the ones that did well today, small caps, housing, financials. So if you're positioned for the rotation, I mean, today was a good day. If you're concentrated in AI and semis, it's a reminder maybe that the market can take away as quickly as it giveth. All right, folks, let's answer one more question before this next break.
Hey, Justin and Luke. I've got a question, ORCL. I really like this entry point and support here. What do you think about this for a near-term hold, 1 to 3 years? And what do you see as the catalyst to reverse the trend from where it's currently at to start gaining more momentum? Think it's a good entry point and just wanted your thoughts. Thanks.
Oracle, of course, the enterprise software and cloud infrastructure giant. So they got databases. They got the OCI AI training platform. Bunch of cloud revenue. I mean, their cloud revenue in 2026 hit roughly $34 billion. They're currently trading at 140. You know, this is a $410 billion market cap company that was worth more than a quarter, more than that at the beginning of the year. I mean, they're down 28% year to date, down 40% over the past 52 weeks. They are also one of those names that, you know, as they beat on, when did they report earnings? June 10th, I want to say. They also announced they're issuing a bunch of new debt, right? Their new financing, rather. $20 billion in equity, $20 billion in debt. You know, that's coming off of, frankly, pretty solid earnings. I mean, revenue was up 21% year over year. That was a beat. Earnings per share was at 211. That beat the 189 estimate by 11.6%. You know, this is one of those names that at this point you got to be pretty high conviction on it if it's here. I'm not saying I necessarily am, but you'd have to be, right? They have a huge backlog. They have solid growth. They have solid lease commitments. But free cash flow is negative in a big way. I mean, geez, $23.6 billion in negative free cash flow. It's supposed to double next year. You know, if you're not certain about AI demand durability, then you got to stay away from this name. And from a technical standpoint, I mean, there's nothing momentum-wise that's telling you this thing is turning. I'm low conviction on this, especially at this price with the way things are looking for it from a momentum basis. So I'd keep it on my watch list for now. Thanks for the call. Tomorrow's market holiday, we got a best of show ready for you, but we still got plenty to talk about today. So when we come back from this break, we got a main focus point and more answers to your finance and investment questions.
At KPP Financial, accountability means more than advice. It means we invest alongside you. Through our parallel investing approach, when we recommend an investment for clients, one or more KPP principals invest their own capital at the same time. Same day, same price, same percentage. If your portfolio moves, ours does too. That is alignment. That is transparency. That is the KPP difference. Visit investtalk.com to get your free portfolio review.
Invest Talk. Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Luke Guerrero is here now. 888-99-CHART.
You know, there's a thing that people often say, which is, I just own the index. And it pops up even more in terms of a proof point of how beneficial it is when we're in a bull market. But what does it really mean? A lot of investors don't even bother to think about what it means. And when I hear that, my first question is naturally, which one? Because right now, the Russell 2000, that's an index. That's up over 20% year to date. The S&P is up about 8 to 9%. That's a different index. The Dow is an entirely different index. That's up 7%. It's a convolutedly created index. And the NASDAQ is a highly concentrated index compared to all those things. I mean, despite the AI rally everyone's been chasing, though, that's only up 11%. Just fell on the weak jobs data today. So I just own the index means wildly different things depending on which index you actually own. And most people, understandably, have no idea why. You know, I'm an index nerd of sorts. You can ask Justin about it. It's kind of annoying. But most people don't know why. So let's dive in a little bit. The answer is different indices can be concentrated in different ways, and sometimes in ways that may absolutely terrify you. I'm going to ignore the Dow because, again, price-weighted, stupid, makes no sense. So let's look at market cap-weighted indices, right? The S&P 500, supposedly 500 companies. In practice, the top 10 companies make up 39% of the index. Top three alone, Microsoft, Apple, NVIDIA. I mean, that's 20 to 22% of the index. The Mag 7 makes up roughly a third of the entire thing. So when you buy the index, what you're really doing right now is making a massive bet on 7 tech companies. And some people don't realize that. And right now that bet is underperforming a basket of 2,000 small companies that most investors could not name. And that outperformance is the widest margin since the early 2000s. Microsoft, you know, a name we hold in our strategies at a lower weight, certainly lower than the index does. That's headed for its worst month since the year 2000. Palantir, a name we constantly got calls on, down 58% this year. Intuit dropped 48%. Accenture, down 42%. Salesforce, down 34%. You know, they're acting more like the, I saw one strategist called it the Maleficent Seven, those names. I mean, these are S&P 500 companies that are dragging the index down while a majority of the stocks in the index are actually doing fine. I mean, it's the opposite of what we saw last year. 65% of the S&P is outperforming the index. That's the broadest participation we've seen in a really long time, meaning the average stock is healthy, but the concentration in mega caps, that is the problem now. At the same time, Russell 2000 recently hit all-time highs back in May. And its gains are spread across the index rather than concentrated in a handful of names because of what it's attacking. It is attacking the 2,000 largest names after the 1,000 largest names in the U.S. market. 65% of its constituents, positive returns, 53%, gained more than 10%. And 34% of them rose more than 25%. I mean, that breadth is what a healthy market looks like. And it's the opposite of what's happening in the S&P, where a few AI stocks are carrying the index and these mega cap spenders are getting punished for their capex. And that's why I'm kind of pushing back here on the conventional wisdom of I own the index, because for years the advice has been just buy the S&P, forget about it. And that was great advice when the S&P's, you know, big components, the Mag 7, were compounding at 30, 40% annually and buying back billions of dollars in stock. But it's less great advice when the same companies are issuing a lot of debt and equity to fund AI infrastructure and at the same time slashing buybacks and seeing their capex absorb upwards of 90% of their operating cash flow. I mean, the structural tailwind that made this cap-weighted index investing strategy good, it made it a one-way trade, a shrinking supply of shares meeting relentless demand, and that's reversing. That is reversing now. It's what we were seeing. According to Goldman, it looks like net equity supply should be flat this year. And you may say, okay, well, it's probably different every year, but I mean, that's the first time since 2003. That's not a coincidence. The last time equity supply stopped shrinking was also the last time small caps beat large caps by this kind of margin. And the valuation gap makes it even clearer. The Russell 2000 trades at 18 times forward earnings, the S&P nearly 26. Small cap 600, which I've railed on before. I mean, it's not really a small cap index, a lot of mid caps in there, but it screens for profitability. It's just at 16 times. That is a 30-year extreme discount. And the gap's only now beginning to close. Small cap earnings are projected to grow just under 20% in each of the next 2 years. Large cap earnings growth, while strong, is decelerating because hyperscaler capex weighs on free cash flow. It's just basic math. Now, aside from that, there's also a structural reason why small caps have been outperforming just beyond valuation, right? About 40% of Russell 2000 companies carry floating rate debt compared to under 10% of the S&P 500. Why? Smaller companies get worse fixed rates. The best way to illustrate this is if Warren Buffett and I went to a bank and asked for a loan, he's a mega cap. He's getting a better rate than me. So when the Fed cuts rates 3 times last year, immediate cash flow boost for small caps. Now, large caps just didn't need and also didn't really feel. They are predominantly domestic revenue base, also insulates them from currency headwinds, from tariff complications, from these geopolitical supply chain risks that weigh on multinationals. Now, I'm not telling you to dump your S&P index fund. It's still a core holding for most portfolios. What I'm telling you is that if it's your only holding, you are far more concentrated than you think. You are far more exposed to mega cap AI capex risk than you realize, and you've been underperforming a simple small cap fund by 12 points this year without having any idea why. Now, the fix isn't complicated. Add an equal weight S&P 500 ETF alongside your cap weighted one. That reduces that mega cap concentration because it weights every name equally, while also keeping your large cap exposure. Add a small cap allocation, even 15 to 20% of your portfolio. That fundamentally changes your return profile. And if you're in the camp that, you know, thinks AI capex is getting overextended and buybacks are disappearing, really the camp that is just seeing what is happening, tilts towards the parts of the market that don't depend on those dynamics. Make your portfolio more resilient to the exact risks that we've been talking about. I just own the index. It stopped being a complete answer probably about a year ago. And this year, more than ever, which index you own matters more than whether you're in one at all. Alrighty, we got the time, so let's drop in another InvestTalk listener question now.
I'm calling from Rockland County, New York, with just a question about if I should be worried or not about some of my big movers the last year or so. Two particularly are Barrick Mining Corp, ticker symbol B as in Barry, and Agnico Eagle Mining. I don't have a good outlook on the stock market in the next year or so. I feel like we're in just a weird time and I don't see it lasting. So I'm trying to stick with my solid, good earners, but I don't know, the last couple of days they've been down. So just wondering. Thank you.
B and AEM, Barrick and Agnico Eagle Mines, are both names that we hold for clients in various strategies. And they had a huge, huge run-up coming out of 2023 into 2026 because, well, they're gold miners. And so their return is essentially going to primarily be a leveraged bet on gold. It doesn't exactly track the prices. You got a bunch going on. You got, you know, idiosyncratic risks from individual mine exposure, regulatory risks from various countries. But both of these are pretty well diversified and are going to give you a similar return profile to what's going on with gold. So as we're coming off of, you know, this huge run-up into really the end of Q1 of this year, you saw one of the worst quarters for gold in quite some time, this most recent quarter. And so expectedly so. I mean, AEM is down 24%. You know, Barrick is down in a similar fashion. Now, for us, along the way, because we always recommend this, you know, to anybody who's investing, we take profit. You see a huge run. AAM was trading at $67 in March of 2024. It was trading at Canadian dollars in March of 2026. And so you should never assume that a chart is always going to go up into the right. You should be taking profits along the way, rebalancing, making sure you're never overexposed to one thing. And even though over the past quarter you've seen gold fall a bit, it doesn't mean that it changes your thesis and why you were exposed to gold in the first place, because the things that have been driving gold are going to continue to drive gold in the long term. People moving away from US dollar denominated assets. Central banks are buying historic levels of gold. And I imagine when things start to calm down geopolitically, that'll probably continue. I've said this before on the show about what drives gold prices. Now, one of those things, though the correlation's a bit looser recently, is the opportunity cost. If you can get yield elsewhere, as yields become higher elsewhere, you're less likely to hold gold because it's a non-yielding asset. The other thing is that when things start to hit the fan, when things actually are in a bad situation, you got to sell the gold. Why? Because you can't pay your phone bill in gold. You pay it in dollars. When you think the future is going to be worse, that's when you buy gold, you hoard it away, you know, because you're worried about inflation, geopolitical risk, all these things. So, you know, I would hope that along the way you took profit. I would encourage you, no matter what your conviction here in these names is, and again, we hold them for clients, to take profit as well. If the market starts to see systematic stress, gold tends to do well as a safe haven asset. So keeping them as a meaningful part of your portfolio, certainly a good idea, in our opinion, at least, because we hold them for clients. That is B and AEM are the tickers. But the real question is about gold. Thanks for the call. Let's play two in a row from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name's Justin from Reno. I bought a stock a few months ago. Symbol is IBRX, Immunity Bio and Company. I was wondering if I should add another position or if that's a bad idea, because I don't want to make a winning stock a losing stock if it goes back down. If I should wait for a pullback, or if you could look into it, let me know what you think for a long-term hold. Thank you.
Immunity Bio is ticker IBRX. It is a commercial stage immunotherapy company. Looks like they have some non-muscle invasive bladder cancer treatments, carcinoma treatments, developing cell therapies. They're actually headquartered around the corner from me in Culver City, California. It is a $9 billion market cap company that is up 376.77% year to date, up 257% over the past 52 weeks. They reported in May, looks like revenue was up 168% year over year. That was a beat. driven primarily from the, looks like, ramp up across their bladder cancer prescribers. Earnings per share, though, missed by 779%. They had a net loss. A lot of red. A lot of red looking at their income statement. Net margins in the negative 300s, though. A couple years ago, that was negative at 173,000. Negative free cash flow with 308 million. Is that a million with an M? Got to be a million with an M. And so what I'm looking at here is a pre-profit company. They're not pre-revenue because they are making revenues. Revenue is up to 300% on an annualized basis going back to 2020. They got a decent pipeline. I mean, it looks like they're on phase three in some of their small cell lung cancer treatments. They were endorsed by Jim Cramer, looks like, so take that for what it's worth. And there's a class action lawsuit that's hanging over them tied to an FDA warning. I mean, listen, the revenue growth is great. They're expanding into various countries, which is solid as well. They have a filing that shows they have another treatment that's launching in January of next year. They have phase three data on their cancer treatment coming. They have a decent amount of cash. I mean, $242 million in cash is certainly solid, especially for a company right here. But at the end of the day, I mean, you can look at it. If you were looking at my FactSet screen right now, you'd see a whole bunch of red. It is a high-octane, incredibly speculative biotech. And that's what it is, right? You need to understand the risks here. It's burning hundreds of millions of dollars per quarter in adjusted losses. There is a unresolved FDA warning letter and a class action lawsuit. And its $9 billion market cap is essentially a bet on its Anktiva platform expanding. It's not betting on current earnings. There's a lottery ticket. So you need to size this as if you're buying a lottery ticket. It's not a core position. It should be a very small position in your portfolio, and you certainly should not put in any more than you are willing to lose to absolute zero. That is IBRX Immunity Bio Inc. Thanks for the call. This is Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero. We have one goal here, and it's to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after this break. It is our final break before the long weekend. So if you got a question, pick up that phone and dial 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
So there's this nonprofit, NERC. And what they do is they monitor the reliability of America's power grid. They did an assessment recently, and there were a couple phrases in there that a bit concerning for not just consumers, but also for investors as well, right? So the CEO said the situation is, quote, a hyper-complex risk environment, and here's my favorite one, a five-alarm fire. And that's coming from the organization whose literal job is keeping the lights on. So those aren't really comforting descriptions, I would say. Now, I dove into this. It's not all bad. You know, the good news is the 58.5 gigawatts of new power resources that have come online. A lot of that is solar, 30 and a half. It's also some solid battery storage. That's about 16. And 7 of natural gas. So there's good diversification there. I mean, it's a record and should handle normal summer conditions. But the bad news is nothing about this summer is normal. I mean, I'm sure you've seen it. There's a dangerous heat wave that is hitting the eastern two-thirds of the country. Temperatures are topping 100 degrees. Droughts are depleting western reservoirs. And that's bad because that threatens hydropower, so that weakens the electrical grid as well. And then you see peak summer demand has grown by 11 gigawatts since last year. And it's primarily driven by not you using, you know, your AC, but by data centers. Now, the part that's really genuinely new and alarming is that in May, this group, NERC, issued a rare alert. Only the third time they've done it in history, warning utilities to overhaul how they track and manage large data center customers. The reason being that clusters of these data centers, they have been spontaneously severing their grid connections and switching to on-site backup power during minor line malfunctions. And when that happens collectively, it essentially destabilizes the entire grid and causes these cascading failures, which, as you can imagine, not a good thing. Right? I mean, think about what this means. These facilities consume power equivalent to small cities. When they suddenly drop off, the grid has to instantly rebalance supply and demand. And if it can't, then these power plants fail, and that's why you get blackouts. You know, they're not spinning machines. They're power electronics where things happen instantly, and that induces all kinds of oscillations and all kinds of other issues. Now, Wood Mackenzie documented another problem. Data centers are consuming electricity in ways that can't really be predicted. Right? They're swinging power consumption by 50 megawatts or more within minutes. That's equivalent to powering 50 Walmart stores. And so that volatility, it doesn't just threaten the grid, it can damage the data center's own backup equipment, which in turn feeds that first problem that we talked about. Now, PJM, which manages the grid for about 67 million people across the Mid-Atlantic and Midwest, they've already received emergency DOE orders allowing them to curtail power data centers as a last resort. But for you, I mean, cooling costs, I don't got to tell you that they're rising. They're projected at $792 this summer, up 10.5% from last year, up nearly 40% since 2020. So on the consumption side, you're facing rising costs because of data centers. Now on the investor side, this is a physical, real-world constraint on AI being built out that doesn't really get enough attention. You can spend $750 billion, $1 trillion on GPUs and data centers, but if your grid can't reliably power them, you're just going to have a bunch of non-turned-on machines. So the company's solving the power problem, your utility scale, battery storage, your grid infrastructure builders, your natural gas generators, eventually your nuclear. That's the real bottleneck. The bottleneck is where the pricing power lives, and the AI trade can't exist without the power trade. And we're going to see this summer, I mean, the power trade is entering what's probably going to be the most stressful test that it has faced in a while. That does it for another episode of Invest Talk. Justin and I and the entire Invest Talk team, thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, which of course you can get at iTunes and Spotify. While you're over there, we'd really appreciate it if you left us a rate and review. I also want to tell you one more time, tomorrow's a market holiday, so we'll have a best of show. And maybe while you're listening to that best of show right after it, you can check out our newest Invest Talk Wealth webinar, Beyond the Yield, how to invest for your income needs. It is posted right now on our YouTube channel. Lastly, if today's show made you think about your personal financial circumstances, I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com and schedule a free portfolio review. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Enjoy your weekend. Happy birthday, America.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.